Parivajakacharaja Astatarasata Si Srimad His Divine Grace Si Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Gaur Premanandi. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tirtham yat pati eta na pati eta chatmani tad vidya atmano maya Yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. Yatir tam yat prati eta. Na prati eta chatmani. Tadvidya atmano maya. Yatha bhaso yatha tamaha.
To me.
Tat.
That.
Vidyat.
You must know.
Atmanaha.
My.
Maya.
Illusory energy.
Yatha.
Just as.
Abhasaha.
The reflection.
Yatha.
As
yes.
Tamaha,
the
darkness. Translation, O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. And I was told to begin the purport starting with the paragraph that reads, the independence of the individual living entity. That's what's showing on the screen, right? Okay, so it's halfway through this long purport, or a third of the way through. The independence of the individual living entity is not real independence, but is just a reflection of the real independence existing in the Supreme Being, the Lord. The false claim of supreme independence by the conditioned souls is illusion, and this conclusion is admitted in this verse, paragraph. Persons with a poor fund of knowledge become illusioned, and therefore the so-called scientists, physiologists, empiric philosophers, etc. become dazzled by the glaring reflection of the sun, moon, electricity, etc., and deny the existence of the Supreme Lord, putting forward theories and different speculations about the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of everything material. Examples. The medical practitioner may deny the existence of the soul in the physiological bodily construction of an individual person, but he cannot give life to a dead body, even though all the mechanisms of the body exist even after death. Another example. The psychologist makes a serious study of the physiological conditions of the brain as if the construction of the cerebral lump were the machine of the functioning mind. But in the dead body, the psychologist cannot bring back the functions of the mind. These scientific studies of the cosmic manifestation or the bodily construction independent of the Supreme Lord are different reflective intellectual gymnastics only, but at the end they are all illusion and nothing more. All such advancement of science and knowledge in the present context of material civilization is but an action of the covering influence of the illusory energy. The illusory energy has two phases of existence, namely the covering influence and the throwing influence. By the throwing influence, the illusory energy throws the living entity into the darkness of ignorance, and by the covering influence, she covers the eyes of men with a poor fund of knowledge about the existence of the Supreme Person who enlightened the supreme individual living being, Brahma. The identity of Brahma with the Supreme Lord is never claimed herein, and therefore such a foolish claim by the man with a poor fund of knowledge is another display of the illusory energy of the Lord. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 16, 18 through 20, that demoniac persons who deny the existence of the Lord are thrown more and more into the darkness of ignorance, and thus demoniac persons transmigrate life after life without any knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Paragraph. The sane man, however, is enlightened in the disciplic succession from Brahmaji, who was personally instructed by the Lord, or in the disciplic succession from Arjuna, who was personally instructed by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita. He accepts this statement of the Lord, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pravartate Iti matva pajante mam buddha bhava samandita. The Lord is the original source of all emanations. And everything that is created, maintained, and annihilated exists by the energy of the Lord. The sane man who knows this is actually learned, and therefore he becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, engaged in the transcendent loving service of the Lord. Paragraph. I wanted to focus on this understanding of reflection. So perhaps I could just stop here, but I was told tomorrow when the kids come, kids get antsy, so I can't get into philosophy too much. So this is the philosophy class and tomorrow's entertainment class, or at least a little simpler. But the concept that's explained, that's the force of this verse and purport, is coming. I mean, the foundation is already laid. So I'm going to focus a little bit this morning on the abhasa, or the reflection terminology that's in the verse, that's amplified in the purport just now. Although the reflectory energy of the Lord, reflectory energy of the Lord, nice phrase, huh? Displays various illusions to the eyes of persons with a poor fund of knowledge. The sane person knows clearly that the Lord can act even from afar, far, even from far, far beyond our vision by his different energies. Just as fire can diffuse heat and light from a distant place. In the medical science of the ancient sages known as the Ayurveda, there is definite acceptance of the Lord's supremacy in the following words. And there's two sections, Sanskrit, apparently extracted from Ayurveda. Jagat yonir anichchasya chit anandaika rupinaha pungso sti prakritir nitya prati chayeva vaspataha. Achetanapi chaitanya yogena paramatmanaha akarod vishvam akilam anityam nata kakritim. There is one Supreme Person who is the progenitor of this cosmic manifestation and whose energy acts as prakriti, or material nature. Here's the dazzling like a reflection. The reflection term appears multiple times because that's within the verse, abhasa. By such illusory action of prakriti, even dead matter is caused to move by the cooperation of living energy of the Lord, and the material world appears like a dramatic performance to the ignorant eye. The ignorant person, therefore, may even be a scientist or a physiologist in the drama of prakriti, while the same person knows prakriti as the illusory energy of the Lord. By such a conclusion, as confirmed by the Bhagavad Gita, it is clear that the living entities are also a display of the Lord's superior energy, para prakriti, just as the material world, the display of the Lord's inferior energy, apara prakriti. The superior energy of the Lord cannot be as good as the Lord. Although there is very little difference between the energy and the possessor of the energy, or the fire and the heat. Fire is possessed of heat, but heat is not fire. This simple thing is not understood by the man with a poor fund of knowledge, who falsely claims that the fire and heat are the same. This energy of the fire, namely heat, is explained here as a reflection. There's the reflection word again. And not directly fire. For heat is the reflection of the fire, not directly fire. So it comes this similarly. Therefore, the living energy, the living energy represented by the living entities is the reflection of the Lord, and never the Lord himself. Being the reflection of the Lord, the existence of the living entity is dependent on the Supreme Lord, who is the original light. This material energy may be compared to darkness, as actually it is darkness, and the activities of the living entities in the darkness are reflections of the original light. So there's reflections within reflections. We'll go over this again. The Lord should be understood by the context of this verse. Non-dependence of both the energies of the Lord, the energies is the material and the living entity, is explained as maya, or illusion. No one can make a solution of the darkness of ignorance simply by the reflection of light. Similarly, no one can come out of material existence simply by the reflected light of the common man. One has to receive the light from the original light itself. The reflection of sunlight in the darkness is unable to drive out the darkness. But the sunlight outside the reflection can drive out the darkness completely. In darkness, no one can see the things in a room. Therefore, a person in the dark is afraid of snakes and scorpions, although there may not be such things. But in the light, the things in the room can be clearly seen, and the fear of snakes and scorpions is at once removed. Therefore, one has to take shelter of the light of the Lord, as in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, and not the reflective personalities who have no touch with the Lord. No one should hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam from a person who does not believe in the existence of the Lord. Such a person is already doomed. And any association with such a doomed person makes the associator also doomed. Not very inviting. So let's go back to the verse. In fact, let's go back to the previous verse. These two verses, as Prabhupada is quoting in the purport, from Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, that's establishing Krishna as the source, which is the same thing that text 33 is doing, that there's one source. Aham Evasameva Agre, etc. So there's the source, and there's that which is not the source but appears to be the source. So that which appears to be the source, that's the focus of 34, or this morning's verse. And the phrase that's being used is abhasa in the last line, yata bhaso yata tamaha. So this place is a reflection of reality. There's reality, and there's reflection of reality. And if the reflection of reality seems to have existence apart from the source of that reflection, that's the illusory energy. I'd like to do mainly two things, because I'm used to when visiting a ledge where there's like a zillion questions, so I'll speak less and discuss more. Very fundamental in, one might say, philosophy or understanding reality, tattva, what is? And this verse is saying, what isn't? And what is is the first verse, and what appears to be existing as being of substance or reality or existing, that doesn't have connection with the source, is not of substance or reality or existing. It exists as a reflection, so the reflection's not false. Reflection is not false. No, so then goes into this whole lengthy discussion, if you like nice philosophy, on mithya. What's the meaning of mithya? It doesn't exist. But that which doesn't exist exists. The reflection is a reflection. It exists. It's not the reality, it's a reflection of the reality, but it exists. Similarly, not the same, but very similarly, in Buddhism, I don't want to give a class on Buddhism, but it also has an idea of what's real. And the conclusion is nothing is real. Or nirvana is real. And what's nirvana? It's cessation of material existence or voidism, so nothing is real. And then there's the perception of that which is real, rather than a whole class on Buddhism. Just some sharing. Because I visit China, it's been incumbent upon me to learn a little bit of what Buddhism really, what Buddha really says, because people say, visiting China, many people, maybe 80% of the people say, I'm Buddhist, or I grew up Buddhist, or something like that. But scratch a little bit, and they really don't know what that means. So, one of the teachers, Jiva Goswami, addresses the teaching of Buddha in Tattvasandarbha in two places. I'll just touch it, but he writes that one of the underpinning teachings of Buddha, it relates to this morning's verse, is what's real is only one thing, or what's consciousness is only one thing, and that's the moment. Chanak vijnana vad. Vijnana in this case is consciousness. So consciousness is momentary. The past is no longer, the future hasn't happened. All there is the moment. And the teaching of Buddha is mindfulness. Be in the moment. And we've all heard those phrases. And without too much elaboration, The objective of mindfulness is be in the moment, be in the moment, be in the moment, be in the moment. We become really good at being in the moment. What happens? You go on the other side of the moment. what's on the other side of the moment? Nirvana. What's nirvana? Cessation of material existence. The moment is no longer. Amen. So the attraction is cessation of material existence, which means cessation of existence or voidism in plain language. The contrast is here. The contrast to both of those, it doesn't exist, mithya or nirvana. I mean, it's a Sanskrit word. There is such a thing as nirvana. And then there's the Vedic understanding of what nirvana is. It's our true existence. Cessation of material existence doesn't mean negation of our existence. Cessation, termination of illusion doesn't mean reality is terminated. So what's reality? That was the previous verse. So what's illusion? That's this verse. And it's seeing the reflection as having nothing to do with the source of that reflection. It just stands alone. That the first paragraph that we read is the false sense of independence. The false sense of independence of myself, or the self. The false sense of independence is resting as a reflection of the real independence. The real independence is the personality of Godhead. That's when the light's on. But supposing the light's out, you don't see that the source of all existence, and then therefore the perception of something is not seen in relation to its source, it's seen as just standing on its own. Like me, or Prakriti. Either, or both. The living entity is the reflection. I'll read directly from Prabhupada's purport, that's where he's indicating this. So the living entity is not self-independent. It's dependent, always. And the illusory capacity to think of oneself as independent is derived from the actual independent supreme. But not acknowledging the independent supreme, I just think I'm independent. And then seeing Prakriti. Microphone closer. Can't you just turn up the volume?
It was on, but
huh?
For the way.
There's three. The source, living entities that are from the source, and Prakriti that's from the source. One is para Prakriti, the other is apara Prakriti, and then there's the source. So the first verse is, there's the source. The second verse is saying, seeing that which is from the source as not having connection with the source, that's Maya. And Maya is being compared to a reflection in darkness. So when there's a reflection in darkness, does it mean it doesn't exist? No. It's a reflection in darkness. That's what it is. And reflection of what? A reflection of reality. Surrounded by darkness. That's why there appears to be a reflection, because there's reality. So that the two things, the false sense of independence of the living entity is a reflection of the supreme independent, and that darkness is also a reflection. I'm going to read what Prabhupada writes. It circles back to the first verse, you know, the foundation that the Sambandhagyan starts with, there's a source of everything, which Prabhupada quotes in the purport from Bhagavad Gita. There is a source of everything. So here's the section from the purport. Focus goes on the word abhasa or reflection. I'm just going to read. There is, this is from the section where Prabhupada is quoted from the Ayurveda. There is one Supreme Person who is the progenitor of this cosmic manifestation and whose energy acts as prakriti or the material nature, dazzling like a reflection. Dazzling like a reflection. So, when there's an object that's being reflected, it's got to be reflected on something. There's the light, and there's the reflection. What's the surface that is the reflecting surface? Answer, it's the mind. It's the mind that serves the living entity to permit the living entity to think that I have a separate existence. Thinking separate from the Supreme, that's Maya. And then Maya supplies the mind so that we can see that which appears to be existing separately from its source, but it doesn't exist separately from the source. It's but a reflection. Going further down the purport. As Prabhupada would often do, he'll take something from nature, and that is fire. And fire has a quality, light, two qualities, light and heat. So where there's fire, there's light and heat. Or where there's light and heat, we can know there's fire. Where there's light and heat, there's fire. May not be blazing fire, but there's fire. It's like, you know, if there's heat in your wall, and you feel there's some heat there. It may not be bursting out of the wall with flames, but there's fire. The fire is generating heat and light. So those are characteristics of fire. This simple thing is not understood by the man with a poor fund of knowledge who falsely claims that the fire and the heat are the same. This energy of the fire, so the energy of fire is heat and light. So heat, which is an energy of fire, is explained here as a reflection, not directly fire. So it's within nature, we can understand something about transcendence by inference. So heat is a characteristic or quality, a lakshana, of fire. So where they're not the same. One is the characteristic and the other is that which generates the characteristic. So over here in the material world, we see something that's a manifestation of the source of that something. But not seeing the connection of that something with its source, we think it's a standalone something. Prakriti, or the living entity, or combination, like stuff. People do stuff. It's just an existing independently of its source. That's the illusory energy. Therefore, the living energy or living entity, that's the soul, represented by the living entities, is the reflection of the Lord. Doesn't mean they don't exist. They exist. But they exist as a reflection of the Lord. On the basis of the existence of the Lord, living entities exist. Now, that's an eternal existence, that's fine. And never the Lord himself. Being the reflection of the Lord, the existence of the living entity, is dependent on the Supreme Lord, who is the original light. This now goes from the living entity to the material energy. This material energy may be compared to darkness, as actually it is darkness, and the activities of the living entities in the darkness are reflections of the original light. So there's these two energies, matter and spirit. As energies, they're emanations from the source. But if one doesn't see the energies or the emanations from the source in relation to the source, then you see something else. You see, what do you see? You see Maya. And then that Maya becomes reality, and then you start studying the Maya as if it's reality, and, you know, being a scientist or this or that, describe it according to Maya evaluations. And with one stroke, the whole thing is being dismissed by this particular verse and how Prabhupada is very expert at dismissing things that are in the illusory position. A little bit more. The Lord should be understood by the context of this verse. Non-dependence of both the energies of the Lord, that's the living entity and Prakriti, material nature. Non-dependence of both the energies of the Lord is explained as Maya or illusion. No one can make a solution of the darkness of ignorance simply by the reflection of light. Similarly, no one can come out of material existence simply by the reflected light of the common man. Semicolon. One has to receive the light from the original light itself. This is foundational teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's one of the four essential verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's foundational. And then other verses expand and further explain, etc. So it's to understand those other verses or the Bhagavatam's message, it's really important to get the foundation right. And the abhasa, or the reflection, exists. It exists. It's not false. Or it's not void. It exists. But it's a reflection. And then what do you do with the reflection? Depends. If you're a devotee, you recognize it as a reflection, and suddenly, or gradually, the reality starts to emerge. The connection of the reflection as something that's coming from the energetic source, meant to be used in the service of the energetic source. And then the reality light starts to go on. You know, further in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining that the light that may come in darkness through a reflection, you can see something, but you can't see in fullness. But when the fullness of the light, let's say, of the sun arises, then it's not just a reflection, it's the light. So that is making a connection with the source of everything, which is what the Bhagavatam is wanting the reader to do, or us to do, is then see things as they really are. Or in the language of the Upanishads, one can then start to see pots and plates that you can't see in darkness. Although they're there, you can't see what's there. You can't see it properly. It's something. So one more time. The Shankara's teaching is it's false. The Buddha's teaching is it's void. It just doesn't exist. And the Bhagavatam teaching, or the Vedic teaching, is it's a reflection. And then there's the reality, and make connection with reality, which is the first verse. And the best means to make that connection with reality, in principle, is yoga, and the best of all systems of yoga is that which is natural for the soul and the proper utilization of Prakriti, which is to engage the soul and Prakriti in loving service to the Supreme. So, that was pretty easy. But there's a philosophical foundation, and that's what the Chatur Sloki verses are doing. is establishing the philosophical foundation so that the challenge that says, oh, you bhakti people, you're just soft. You can't understand philosophy, so go ahead and be silly and, you know, do your bhakti thing. But then, you know, for those more deeply philosophical persons, here's the reality. And then, you know, they replace the message of Bhagavatam with another message. We're not okay with that. I mean, they're okay. If they want to do that, that's okay. But we're not okay with doing that. It's good to have a clear philosophical foundation for why we're doing what we're doing. And the Bhagavatam is helping to establish that. And these four verses are the foundational verses for the Bhagavatam. So I'm looking at the clock and it's 12 minutes before the hour. Let's see if there's some Alashma discussion on this morning's verse. Yes, I thought so.
So happy to see you.
Huh?
Very happy to see you.
Well, it's nice to be here again. You know, pandemic is mostly behind us.
Maharaj, I have understanding that Shankara philosophy, that he did not say only false, there's a half-truth. The other half-truth, maybe I want you to correct me. Other half-truth, he said he accepts Brahman, but he says cessation of individuality. He accepted one truth. He did say false also about this material cosmic.
Yes.
Okay. So we are on the same. Yes. Because you said false only,
But what is false? What is that phrase, mithya, or false?
That pratiphalam.
Anything other than Brahman is false. The concept, and with the concept, seeing and experiencing anything other than Brahman is false.
But it makes sense in one sense, because the verse says jat pratiyeta, and then tadvidyat atmanamaya jat abhaso. So abhaso here, I remember reading Sanatan Goswami Pad in Vaishnava Tosani that if I see my face in the mirror,
yes,
and if somebody wants to trace me through the mirror, they will be disappointed because there is no Pran Govinda Das in the mirror. But it is a reflection.
Yes.
So that's why they say it's mitha, in that sense.
That's not what they say. I disagree with what your statement. The statement that's what they say, that's not what they say.
Well, they have a four philosophies. Okay, so disagree. One is like that.
Huh?
They have a four principles. Sapna Brahm, Satantra Brahm. So one Brahm is that. I'm not saying we agree, but I say that's what they say. But it makes sense though. In reflection, my face is there, but if somebody wants to trace me through the mirror, they will be disappointed.
That's correct. That statement is correct. But that's not what we're discussing. Well, you're bringing it up. Here we go. My disagreement with you is... What does Shankara's meaning of mithya, not that Brahman is mithya, but anything other than Brahman is mithya. Anything other than Brahman is mithya. So what is that mithya?
Pratiphalan, reflection in the mirror, cannot be traced. There's nothing.
We disagree. That's not what he's saying. The meaning of nitya is a reflection that you can't see, that someone else cannot see. We disagree. But that's okay. Yes?
And let us hear what the scientists are saying about our existence. They're saying that they can explain all existence without a Supreme Being.
Without what?
Without a Supreme Being. They can explain all existence without a Supreme Being.
Sure.
How would you conquer them? Or how can we conquer them?
You know, context is everything in terms of responding to your question. The context of the person making such statement, whether they're making the statement about, and the way they're making the statement. Prabhupada does it twice in the purport. One of them is, if everything can be explained by you, then here's the elements of creation. Go ahead and make a life. Is it doable? You know, Sarup Damodar making this challenge of, here's the chemicals, can you create life? That I cannot say. So, just for example, everything can be explained. That's a conceptual explanation. Now can you make the experiment and manifest life with chemicals? For example, can everything just be explained by material laws, matter and the laws governing matter, and that there's nothing else? Go ahead, make life with matter and the laws governing matter. For example. Or, you know, the other example that's in the purport, the mind. Here's the brain, the mind. And physical cause and effect, the matter and the laws governing matter, is inadequate to offer all explanation of all things. Without the touch of spirit, it's inadequate. Yes?
Yes, Maharaj. There were a couple of listeners online who had questions.
I'm ready.
Pardon?
I'm ready for anything. This
yes.
Is
well, there were a couple of devotees that were observing that perhaps the word myth came out of mitya, since the...
The word myth came out of what?
Mitya, perhaps. They were just observing that.
Okay, interesting.
And then Mother Nanda of our very fair Alachua community was wondering, she says, what confuses me is the example given that an object is reflected in darkness, and you, Maharaj, said that the mind is the surface on which the object is reflected.
Yes.
But as far as the example saying reflected in darkness, she's wondering, how can something be reflected in darkness?
Well, the darkness metaphor is, you know, in simple terms, it's illusion or a mistaken apprehension of something. But when something appears to exist, that's the reflection. Something appears to exist in darkness, what is it that's reflecting that light in darkness? It's the mind that appears to exist apart from the connection with the source. Now, I don't know if you're satisfied with that answer, but that's probably the best I can do. Anyone else over on this side? Yes, I see a hand up.
So kind of following from Nanda's question, I was also questioning, how do we experience a reflection in darkness? Because there has to be some light.
Yes.
Give me an example, like draw the picture. What do we see in our everyday life where there's
a reflection of light in darkness? That's what you want to know. A practical example.
Yeah.
I could do something.
Huh?
I got this water jar. Sometimes
sometimes when we're walking by here in the temple in the dark, but there's a reflection in the mirror of these glass, and you could actually swear when it's dark, you're looking out, and someone's walking over there, and you see a reflection of them, and it looks like someone's walking out on the veranda, but that's not at all. It's totally dark, but there's this reflection from someone inside, or at a distance, and it's dark, but there's this glass, and they're not there.
Do you like that example? Ragatmika?
I get a better one.
There's sunlight.
No, I get it. Yeah, but it's not there. It's a reflection.
But your question specifically was, how can there be a reflection in darkness? And that is, it appears to be, but there's a reflecting surface.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a light, and yes, there's a reflecting surface, and yes, there appears to be a reflection in darkness. So it doesn't take to say reflection in darkness doesn't mean the reflection doesn't exist. Doesn't mean the source of light doesn't exist. It's just a reflection in darkness. It appears to be something that it's not.
Take your body down.
Well, if you put a flashlight in a mirror, then the light lights something else up. It's a reflection of the flashlight. You ain't pointing the flashlight directly at that. It's reflecting off the mirror. So the original source is the flashlight, and the light that you're getting over there is a reflection off the mirror. For $5, you can get a flashlight and try it yourself.
Forgot, Mika, are you okay?
I think so.
You think so? It's not a statement that there isn't. It seems that the stumbling block for you is there or is there not a source of light? Yes, there is a source of light. There is a source of, yeah, so in the absolute truth, that's Krishna.
Yeah.
And the material world, that you have, these are examples of experience of there is a source of light, but one may not see that source of light, but one can see the reflection of that source of light in darkness. And material existence is not seeing the ultimate source. One just sees reality or light or something of substance, of existence, without a connection with the source of everything, the source of that reflection. That's the metaphor to understand that's meant to be explaining this particular example. Okay? Great. Next.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
So in the spiritual world, then there's never any darkness like in the material world. There's like pure darkness because it's always effulgence there.
Did you get the question?
In this, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Better.
In the spiritual world,
There's
never any darkness.
Well,
like in the material world where there's no indulgence.
Now you're going way up there. Let me ask you, in Krishna Loka, is there day and night?
Yes and no.
Yes and no, okay.
Yes.
Of course there is. But it's the
internal. But the moon is always
But it's the
there.
Internal energy. It's not.
Krishna's always shining.
Excuse me, but it's not the day and night like you know or I know.
Right. Right.
It's another kind.
Right.
There's the rising of the full moon, and then there's the setting of the full moon, and then the next day begins, and it's the appearance of the passage of time, but there's no passage of time. There's no day and night, but there's day and night. There's no day and night as we know, but there's the internal potency acting to enhance the pleasure pastimes of Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you. That was invigorating. I feel nervous because I don't share here. But I was thinking of a practical example of the reflection versus reality that we experience and wondering if this is what's being described. Before I came into Krishna consciousness, I'm walking down this road on campus every day, and I'm feeling this depth of loneliness and emptiness. And I didn't, I was searching for a truth, but there was no answer, there was no connection. And so I started praying, and I was desperate. And I met the devotees, you know, through devotees that are in this room, and I began to have a relationship with God. And I remember walking, I remember one morning walking down that same exact road, passing by Krishna Lunch and looking up at the trees and feeling that I'm not alone. This entire existence is permeated with benevolent consciousness and wants a relationship with me. And that everything that I'm looking at is a being. Everything is a soul. And so the way that I was seeing completely, because it was such a drastic shift, I felt that I was coming from darkness into light. Even though I was looking at the same images, the images were different. And so my...
Your experience of the images was different.
Yes. So it's not that, you know, we have to think so hard. How do we see a reflection of darkness? It's that our... Every day, our perception is, are we connecting everything to Krishna? Are we seeing everything as Krishna's energy or not? Are we seeing in the reflection of the darkness, or are we actually seeing Krishna's creation? Is that correct? Or one way to look at it?
You had me almost saying yes. It's a short response to your nice question, your nice sharing of your experience. Revelation is Krishna's kindness, and that you experience Krishna's kindness, fantastic. And, you know, a little editing is not that all things are souls. There's souls everywhere, yes, but there's matter and there's spirit, and there's a distinction between the two. It's just a small edit from what you said. And yes, it's God's creation, and there's a purpose for it. And there's the material, and there's the spiritual purpose for it. So may Krishna bless you with that vision that these trees and entities and things that are part of his material manifestation have their connection with him, which is exactly what was... Read the last paragraph again, in the purport that we read. It's the next to the last paragraph, but read it again, where one can see something in reflected light, but when the sun comes up, then one can see everything clearly. So when the sun comes up, then you can see everything clearly. I mean, notionally at least. So as your Krishna consciousness progresses, then you can start to see as Krishna sees, which is pretty nice. Then you're not seeing things separate from Krishna. You're seeing things in relation to Krishna, because they are. I'm looking at the clock, and it's about 10 after, and I think it's time to end. I see one hand, and he's very enthusiastic. Just one last question right up here in the front.
The different kinds of Buddhas.
Say it slowly.
The different kinds of Buddhas.
What?
One time I met a Pure Land Buddhist who said, he was very angry, he said, the Hare Krishnas say we're all voidists, but we're not voidists, we believe in Pure Land. And I told him, that you believe in Pure Land, but then ultimately it's Sunya.
No. Excuse me, so for being so abrupt. Pure Land Buddhism says... This is my understanding. It's probably like umpteen versions of what Pure Land Buddhism says. But Pure Land Buddhism, Amitabha Buddha was a very merciful Buddha that understood most people aren't going to make it. And so he created, Amitabha Buddha created this kind of interim place, a launching pad. You can go to the Pure Land, and those that go to the Pure Land that Amitabha Buddha created
one can enjoy, it's kind of like a super heaven. And then there are some who will then continue from there to nirvana position. But in case you don't make it to nirvana, the Pure Land Buddhism says there's this really nice place that Amitabha Buddha created that you can go there and enjoy like anything.
He created a whole dump.
He created this place called Pure Land.
By his mind.
By however he did it. As a mercy for those that aren't going to make it to nirvana. Recognizing it's not easy to make it to nirvana. He created this Pure Land place. And those that are Pure Land Buddhists worship Amitabha Buddha, and they aspire to go to the Pure Land that Amitabha Buddha created for them. And they're, at least this is my understanding, again, there's probably umpteen versions of what Amitabha Buddha taught and did. But, you know, this fellow that you met probably is one of the umpteen versions that says something other than what I just said. But the standard understanding is what I just said. It's a stopover place for people that haven't made it yet, but they don't just have to take birth again in the material atmosphere. But they go to Pure Land and enjoy with Amitabha Buddha, who graciously receives them and helps them if they so desire and have the capacity and so forth to go to the Nirvana Land, which is voidism. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.